Hey, you're listening to the Smoked Meat Podcast. I'm your host, Brad Pittman. Smoked Meat's brought to you by Joe's Underground at the corner of 8th and Broad in Augusta, Georgia, in the bottom of the Lamar Building. When you go into Joe's, they make you feel like family every time you go in. So go on in, have a good time, hang out with Jeremy and the gang, and just meet some new friends, hang out with old ones. Just remember, I goes to Joe's and so should you. That's Joe's Underground at the corner of 8th and Broad in Augusta, Georgia, in the bottom of the Lamar Building. Today, I've got a very special guest. I got Mr. Kenny Lee Lewis. Kenny played guitar and bass with Steve Miller. He played with the Beach Boys a couple of times. Played with Eddie Money. You name it, he's played with them, man. He's just such a great guy. Now, we had a really good time today, so I hope y'all listen and just enjoy. You're on Smoked Meat. Hey, so how you doing today, Kenny Lee?
I'm doing great, Brad. Thank you for having me on your show.
Oh, thanks for being on, man. I am digging this. I've been looking forward to it. But, oh, yeah. Yeah, most definitely. For my people that don't know, there's probably one that doesn't know. I mean, you've played with so many people. I know you were Steve Miller. I've seen where you've done Eddie Money, the freaking Beach Boys, and Brian Wilson.
Yep.
Just a little bit of everything. I mean, George Thorogood, Bonnie Raitt. It's like,
Yep. Yeah, I've been very, very fortunate. I've had a wonderful career, and I wouldn't change a thing. And I'm just blessed. I thank the Lord all the time, and thank the Creator for giving me this gift and allowing me to have a propensity for playing, you know, fretted instruments. Came really early for me in my life. I started on ukulele when I was about 7 or 8 years old. And I can't remember whether it was 7 or 8 because it was so long ago, but it was sometime around then. But I just had a natural ability to be able to mimic fretted instrument performances from other artists. And so I was able to kind of ape them for a while when I finally learned how to read music and, you know, got college stage band and learned how to play jazz. And, you know, eventually moved to L.A. in about 1973 and to become a studio musician.
Mm. Very cool. Yeah, I would love to be able to play. About the only thing I can do is chicken pick.
Okay, and smoke some meat.
Yeah, definitely can smoke some meat. But yeah, man, I've never been able to play. You know, all my cousins could pick up a pine limb and a shoestring and sound like Jimi Hendrix. I mean, any instrument they want to play, they just start playing.
Yeah, well, that's the way I was. I used to drive all my friends crazy. Go, how would you do that?
Yeah,
I don't know. I just feel it comes natural, you know.
Yeah, my daughter's the same way. She picked up a guitar and she decided she took it in, I think it was 10th grade in high school, 9th or 10th grade, and she can play.
Wow. So is she still playing? Is she playing professionally or anything?
No, she plays a little bit here and there. She's got a Fender Acoustic Electric. She'll play in her room. It's funny. I love being in front of people. I mean, if I could talk to 10 million people a night, I would. And, both my kids love to sing and dance and do all that stuff, and they will not do it anywhere but in their room.
Wow.
They will not get in front of people.
Well, my kids are the same way. I mean, I've got two daughters that are both excellent guitar and bass players, and I've never asked them to play that, and I've never tried to make them do that professionally. So now they become artists. They're hand-drawn artists. My one older daughter, she's actually an art director at DreamWorks and has a show on Netflix right now. But my youngest is just finishing her degree as an illustrator, and she'll probably get pulled into the business by my older daughter. But they're more artists, hand artists, but they could play great bass and guitar. They just don't pursue it as a career. Yeah. That's okay.
Yeah. What shows your daughter got on Netflix?
She's got a show called, it's a kids kind of cartoon animated show called, Archibald's Next Big Thing. And it's on Netflix.
Very cool.
I think they're just going into their second season.
Because I'm always looking for something new to watch, because I think I've watched everything on Netflix, Amazon, Tubi, Crackle, you name it.
Wow. Yeah, Archibald's Next Big Thing is the name of the show.
Very cool. I will check that out. But, I love my kids, and it's funny. I feel like I've failed them as far as music goes, because I'm that dad who, I can tell I'm getting old because my playlist hasn't changed for the last 20 years.
Right.
And, I can't remember where we were going. We were going somewhere one time, and Kid Rock came on, and they started calling him old man music. I almost stopped the car.
Kid Rock was old man music?
Yeah.
Well, that's probably because he was doing, you know, the Sweet Home Alabama cover and all that stuff and morphing it. And,
oh, I think it was Ball at the Ball.
Oh, okay. So yeah. In other words, even his rap and his his crossover hip hop was old man music. That's funny.
And they didn't know who he was. I felt like such a failure as a dad. I'm like, really? Because my oldest daughter's into K-pop right now.
Oh.
And that drives me insane, which, I mean, my music probably drove my parents insane, so I'm just getting paid back. But
gotcha.
I'll make her mad. I'll ask her. I said, do you speak Korean? Because most of them just sing in Korean, which is cool. Music's universal.
Yeah. No, they're coming up as a large artistic contributor to, modern art forms of music. You know, obviously they do very well with classical music, but you know, with the hip hop and the whole scene that they've been doing, and also they do R&B real good. Filipinos are the ones that are really good though. I mean, they can mime anybody. The lead singer for Foreigner, Arnell Pineda, is a good friend of mine. Boy, could he nail Steve Perry, because I grew up with Steve Perry in the San Joaquin Valley. We were friends and moved to LA at the same time. And in fact, my wife Diane Steinberg doing a record on ABC Dunhill in 77, and she was going to hire him as a background singer because he wasn't really doing a whole lot. And she ended up getting this movie and getting Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds role in the Sgt. Pepper movie with Peter Frampton and the Bee Gees. And so she had to take that movie. She didn't tour it, so we could never use our band. So we had to let Steve Perry go as our background singer, who he'd hired. And he went back to Hanford and got into the chicken ranch business because he was so disillusioned with music, he didn't want to play it no more. and then finally, Herbie Herbert tracked him down and said, hey, you got to audition for this band called Journey. He went, no, I don't want to do that. I'm going to raise chickens and have a real job. It was pretty funny. He had to wine and dine him and his mom in order to get him to come up to San Francisco to audition for Journey. Isn't that funny story?
That is awesome. I love it. Oh, man. I just think, you know, had that movie not, you know, come out and your wife hadn't gotten in there, you know, Journeyman never come about.
Yeah, yeah. Well, unfortunately, the movie was kind of a bomb, but the soundtrack did very well.
Oh, yeah.
And she had sang three songs on the soundtrack, so she made some pretty good money. So that was good.
Oh, yeah. If you hear me cough, it's not on the recording. I pop my thing down.
So, oh, it's not recording?
No, whenever I'm coughing, it don't show up on the recording.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, I see. You edited it out, is what you're saying.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that's fine. Okay, cool. Well, what can I answer for you? You got any more questions about, my career or anything?
Let me see. It's been such a long one, man. I mean, you started playing professionally before I was born.
Really?
Yeah, not very. Well, I was born in 70. You said 73, didn't you?
Yeah, 73 is when I moved to L.A. Okay. Well, I was actually playing professionally before then, but, I mean, I moved to L.A. in 73 to really, really pursue, you know, being a professional studio musician. That was my goal. I had some friends in Sacramento who had brothers that were living in L.A. at the time that were professional studio people, and they're the ones that kind of brought me in. They were called the Perry family, and they were originally from Stockton and San Jose, but they settled in Sacramento. And I went to junior high school with one of the youngest brothers, who was a drummer. He became the drummer in my first band, and he was the one that brought me into the business. Okay. His name was John Perry.
Okay. Well, I was two when you moved to L.A. then. Yeah.
You're making me feel old.
No, you moved there when you moved there when you were three. So.
Okay.
Yep. But yeah, man. You know, one thing I like to do on this show, you know, I go over the things that, you know, the histories, because I mean, that's one thing that people listen for, because that's just, it is what it is.
Right.
And, you know, I learned from Fred Schneider. He was one of my first musicians, Fred Schneider from the B-52s.
Fred Schneider, the singer?
Yeah. He was one of my first big interviews. And I prepped for this thing and I wrote down 3 pages of notes. I mean, just you name it. It was about the B-52s, and
can I sing my favorite line from him?
You can.
Okay, I got me a Chrysler. It's as big as a whale,
and it's about to set sail.
I love that lyric.
Oh yeah, and I started talking to him, and he is such a nice guy. I mean, he is just great guy.
I don't think I've ever met him.
He is cool. And when I started
Where's he from? You know where he's from?
Oh, man, it's up north. I can't think don't worry exactly about where it is. No,
I thought maybe you might know where he's from.
He's a Yankee.
Okay.
But, you know, I started talking about the B-52s, and he cut me off. He said, man, that's 40 years worth of history. Everybody can read that. Let's talk about now. I'm like, oh, man.
He didn't want to talk about no rock lobster.
Yeah. And I'm like, oh, this is going to be rough because I hadn't prepared for a lot, you know. And
right.
It wound up being about a 20-minute long interview, but it was still really good. And he taught me, you know, while we go over this stuff, we just kind of steer everywhere because it is what it is. You know, I don't feel like I do interviews. I make friends.
Well, that's very kind. Thank you for letting me be one of your friends.
Yeah, because, you know, I could just get on here and go, so, Kenny Lee, tell me about your newest solo album in the nice radio voice, you know, and that's just canned.
Yeah, I've done those too.
Yeah, and you get tired of answering the same thing over and over and over because that just, I've listened to shows like that. And like when I listen to Howie Mandel on a podcast, I've listened to about 7 of them and everybody asking the same exact thing. And it's, you can tell he is so tired of answering those same questions.
Yeah.
So, but I always have to fanboy out a little bit because I'm meeting heroes, you know. Y'all are just
well you can do some more fanboy stuff. So what other artists or songs have I been involved with that you might want to ask a question or, you know?
Brian Wilson, that musical Brian genius. Wilson.
Okay. So I'm doing a cooking show. Pilot in 1990. It was called Rock and Roll Kitchen. You can actually look it up on YouTube. There's actually a theme song and a couple trailers for Rock and Roll Kitchen. And I was the MD and I was one of the guitar players in the band, which was a killer band. And our 3 guests that we had for this pilot, we were trying to do a cooking show that had rock celebrities on it that would come on, play with the house band, and then cook a dish. And so we had Ginger Baker from Cream. He came and did some English pancakes. And then we had Mark Andes from Heart and Firepaw and all those other bands he ever played with. I think he was also in, he was in Spirit, if I'm not mistaken. Anyway, the third guest we had was Brian Wilson. He had just broken away from Doc Landy, and he had a psychiatrist friend of his who he trusted who drove him over to the pilot. And Scotty Page, who I'm actually playing with in about 10 days in
Scotty's
Pennsylvania
amazing.
On a gig we're doing. He played sax with Pink Floyd and Supertramp, Toto, a whole bunch of big people. Anyway, he was really good friends with Brian from the L.A., you know, hang days because he was an L.A. guy. I was, you know, born in L.A., but I was raised up in Sacramento. So when I moved to L.A. in 73, I was kind of catching up with everybody as far as the L.A. scene. But he knew Brian, brought him to the pilot, and he did Surfer Girl. And he must have taken like 8 takes on the piece. Every time he was doing it, it sounded perfect. He just sounded wonderful. But he would stop right in the middle and go, nah, that sucked. I'm going to do it again. So he was kind of funny. And he had, like I said, he had just gotten away from Doc Landy. So he was just trying to, you spoke about your marbles earlier. He was just starting to get his marbles back, his scrambled eggs, I should say, back together in his brain. And, he started cooking a thing called Malibu chicken that he made. I think it had olives in it, if I'm not mistaken. But it was really good, and he really got into it, and his speech was articulate. He was very on point and focused. So the cooking made him focus on something and got him to come back to normal.
Yeah.
And that was the first time Scotty said he'd ever seen him really, like, come back to just being a normal guy. And since then, you know, of course, he's done pretty well.
Yeah.
So that was my experience with playing with him, was playing on Surfer Girl with him with this cooking show. So that's my credit with Brian Wilson.
That's awesome, man. Doc Landy did a number on him, man. That was...
Oh, yeah.
But before I ever saw that movie, you know, I read his book, and I'm like, holy cow.
Yeah, it was trippy. No doubt.
Yeah. And, you know, man, you know, Scotty Page, he was my 100th episode. And he is such an awesome guy. I love Scott. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And let me see. I know you had George Thorogood on there.
Yep.
You know, guitar maniac.
Yeah, he's funny, man. He's a good friend of ours. He actually was a good friend of Norton Buffalo's, who was our saxophone player in the Miller Band, who was a wonderful sax player from out here on the West Coast. And Norton passed in 2009, I believe, of lung cancer. And we did a benefit for Norton and his wife. George came and played, which was great. And Steve, who still had Norton's famous, he had two maracas that he would duct tape together because he liked the sound of two of them at the same time. He ended up giving Norton's favorite double maracas to George Thurgood as a memorial, you know, gesture. And he just was just so taken by that. And he was so, every time I see him, he always talks about, I got Norton's maracas. You guys are the greatest. And he was so funny. But yeah, George is a good guy. George did something one night that was really interesting. He was opening for us, and we started playing Gangster of Love, which of course is a Johnny Guitar Watson song. And he always wanted to play with Steve on that song. So he was just watching from the backstage, and he ran out on stage, jumped behind Steve without Steve seeing him, and he reached over the top while he was playing the song, and he grabbed the guitar off Steve and ripped it off Steve and put it on and started running around playing the song in the middle of the show. And Steve has always had a guitar on when he's performing. He doesn't know what to do when he doesn't have a guitar, you know. He starts, you know, sitting there trying to like act like Frank Sinatra or something. It's pretty funny. But he didn't know what to do because he loved George and he was just lost. And so he started trying to dance a little, you know, move around a little. And, of course, by the end of the song, George had already given the guitar back to Steve, and he profusely apologized for stealing the guitar off Steve in the middle of the show. But Steve forgave him, and it was a special moment in the Steve Miller Band where George Thurgood stole the show and stole Steve's guitar in the middle of Gangster Love. That was pretty funny. So that's a good George Thurgood story.
That's an amazing George Thurgood story. And, you know, that's
the... And it's on video. It's on video somewhere. I think you can see it online. I think it's on YouTube.
Oh, I know what I'm looking for here in just a little while. Oh, yeah. You know, that's the neat thing about getting to go out and perform is just the things like that that can happen. Just little things that make a whole show or, you know, give you such memories.
Yeah.
And, you know, you never know who's going to be at your show. You don't know who's in the audience. And that's the neat thing about it because, you know, doing stand-up, I love getting out there and I love making people laugh. I've never really made any money yet. I think I made $50 at one show. But I have fun with it, you know.
You're talking about as a comedian?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, hey, at least you can call yourself a professional. You made some money.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think it actually cost me about $300 to go down and play the show.
But, well, now you know what it's like to be a rock musician as a band leader. Mm-hmm. I mean, I go do gigs all the time, and I end up paying my guys, and I end up, you know, paying them out of my pocket because yeah. I just like playing so much, I don't mind taking a loss.
Yeah, that's me, man. I just love making people smile. You know, any way that I can, I love doing it.
And that's great. That's a blessing.
Yeah, you know, me and a buddy of mine actually went down to Savannah for the show, and the guy who booked me, he had a place that he called The Mansion, which I never went, but he said, you know, if y'all want to, y'all can stay here. Don't worry about a hotel. And the vibe that he gave off was just so creepy, we got us a room somewhere. And wow. I'm so glad that we did because when I finally met him face to face, he was just, man, he was a weird cat.
Hold on just a second. Okay. I'm going to pop this lid off my steam cooker. Hold on just a second.
Oh, yeah.
Oh. Actually, the steam's still coming out. I got to wait. Go ahead.
Oh, man. But, yeah, you know, but. Yeah, I would love to get rich and everything off doing it, but I mean, it's fun as long as I break even or, you know, I just love making people smile. And I was on your website and I saw your philosophy and man, that blew me away, you know, talking about talent and predestiny.
Yeah.
You know,
that's what I was saying about how I thank the creator for the propensity to play fretted instruments because that was a gift that was given to me before I was born. I mean, that was nothing that I learned or worked hard at, it was really easy for me. And that's like I was saying, like some of you, you look at some of your friends and you get frustrated because they can do it so easily. I was that guy. You know, I mean, I just go, I don't know, I'm just picking up, man. You know, literally, I could pick up any Japanese or, you know, Chinese guitar and just start wailing on it. And people go like, wait a minute, I've never been able to get that guitar to sound like that. And I go, well, I don't have to tell you.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's funny. I bought a, when I decided to start playing, I bought an acoustic electric. And what else did I buy? Oh, I bought a, an old, man, I told you I lose words and I can't believe a lot, an old Les Paul clone.
Yeah.
And it was the Japanese one. I can't remember the name of the company, but they, Fender, or not Fender, Gibson actually sued them because it was such a close copy.
Probably Ibanez?
No,
or
it wasn't Ibanez. It was, I can't remember the name of the company. It was
Ventura? Was it Ventura?
I think it started with an F.
Oh, okay.
But it's an older one, but I took him over to his house, you know, and he said, man, this is nice. And he started playing the acoustic, and I'm like, it does not wow. sound anything like that when I play it. And he's like, well, do exactly what I'm doing. And he showed me, and I did exactly like he was doing, and it sounded nothing like when he played it.
Yeah, there's the thing in the touch and the fingertips that has a spiritual connection with your mechanics,
yeah.
biological mechanics of what you're made of is where that connection happens. And there's some people that have it, some people don't.
Yep. And you know, I learned that I don't have the musical gift, which I'm fine with. I mean, I don't even sing much. When I sing in the shower, the water quits running. And
you know, and I've done a lot of teaching over the years, and it's like when you teach, hold on a second, turn that off. When you teach, you know, a lot of times you'll have a student say, hey, I'm doing pretty good here, aren't I? Should I quit my job to become a musician? And I, as a teacher, I can always tell if they have the gift, or sometimes we call the curse.
Mm-hmm.
Hold on just a second.
Okay.
There it is, guys. There's your shoe. I just popped the lid off the steam cooker. Sorry.
And the thing is, knowing what's in there, I can smell it right now, and it's killing
me.
Oh
man, it smells really good.
Oh man.
But anyway, when they ask me that, and they go like, you know, Kenny, do you think I should, you know, try to pursue a career as a professional musician? I know if they have it or not.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't have what we call the curse, which is the thing that I just described, which is like just a natural propensity to just master the instrument like pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
I just have to tell them. I said, no, I don't think so. I think you should keep your job and yeah. just enjoy music as a muse in your life that is a healing, vibration-orientated sort of application that you have around you in your sphere and in your aura and around you that just makes you feel good. And you just, I mean, even if you just get up in the middle of the night, take an acoustic guitar and just play a couple of little chords and just strum it and just let it ring into the night in the darkness, what happens is that your body will feel that vibration. It'll start to line up with that, and your blood flow will change from the magnetism and the different directions that the frequencies are promoting around your aura. And a lot of people don't know that that's happening, you know, but that's a really nice thing to subject yourself to, even if you can't play very
yeah.
well.
Yeah.
Just the sound, it just bathes you with this really beautiful vibration that I think actually heals people. And that's why music's so important to all. That's why this COVID thing is so tragic, because now we can't get together and experience it together because we can't gather in groups.
Yeah.
So it's really kind of killed that part of our human nature, which is really a shame. And I'm not just saying that because I make money doing it. I know that it goes beyond the business part. It is a healing and wonderful part of our, not only our American heritage with the music we've created with blues and jazz and rock, but it is a, even in, Mongolia, you know, when they do throat singing and play their little guitars, you know, they're doing the same thing.
Yeah.
They're just doing it a different way, but it's just as important.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm living proof that music does heal. You know, I told you about the strokes and the bad stutter.
Yep, yep.
And I had what I called my cook shack, where we got the name of the show from. And I would go out there. That was what I felt like was my safe place, because being at home that long and being a paramedic for so long, and just finally getting to wind down, it brought a lot of PTSD to the surface also.
Wow.
So I dealt with both of those at once, and I was a mess.
And wow.
I was out there. I had all my grills and my griddles and my refrigerator, and I had a surround sound system out there, had lights, you name it, I had it. And that was just my safe space. And I was out there one day cleaning my guns, just because that helps me too. And I was listening to metal as loud as I could. And have you ever heard of a guitarist named Monty Montgomery? He's out of Texas.
Who?
Monty Montgomery.
Monty Montgomery.
Yes.
That sounds really familiar.
This cat is a beast. He did a version of Romeo and Juliet that Dire Straits did. It's got about a 10-minute solo at the end of it. He's the only one on stage. He plays it live, and he sounds like three people playing at once. And he is a beast.
I know those guys. Now, see, that's something that I've always been. There's other people that are on another level, even from where I was blessed just as a young person. There's other people that can do that kind of stuff where they play like a piano player, where they're playing left-hand bass, chord accompaniment, and lead melody all at the same time.
Yeah.
And somebody that would be a good example would be like Lenny Bro, and some of the some of the jazz players, you know, like George Van Epps and Johnny Smith, and you know Herb Ellis, Joe Pass, and of course Wes Montgomery, the all-time greatest. But they could do that stuff, and you go like, how in the hell did they do that?
Yeah.
But I've never been at that level. I'm still trying to like woodshed Wes Montgomery solos. That's taken me all my life.
I decided I wanted to hear that, so I downloaded it, and I had tried to, everybody said, do like Mel Tillis. He stutters, but he sings perfectly. And I had tried that.
Yeah, it's true. In fact, our monitor mixer in the Steve Miller Band worked with Mel Tillis for many, many years in Branson.
Yeah, and you know, that just, it never worked for me. So I was, you know, I'd given up hope. And I was listening to this song, and I realized about 2 minutes in, I was singing it note for note perfectly. And it was so weird. I did that probably 10 times. And we were out in the middle of nowhere. We're out in the country where we were. And my wife was walking around in the yard just doing laps, getting exercise. And I frantically waved her over. She thought something was wrong. She came running. And I got to give her the first clear I love you she had had in 4 months.
Aww.
And, you know, I sang that song probably 100 times in 2 days.
Wow.
And I sent him a message on Facebook. And, you know, it's funny, here I was, you know, mid-40s, sending a guy a fan letter. But he needed to know that he made a difference. I told him the story. And he got my phone number, and he called me. I woke up one morning, and I looked on my phone. It said a number from Texas. I'm like, great, who do I owe money to from Texas? So I answered it and said, hello. He said, is this Brad? I'm like, yeah, who is this? He said, this Monty Montgomery. I said, what? And he said, I got your message. He said, I started to just message you back, but I needed to hear this voice. And we talked for about 20 or 30 minutes, and it was amazing, because that music helped heal me. So I'm a firm believer in that.
Yep. Yeah, it's a healing thing.
Yeah.
In fact, the book that I've written that's on Amazon called Skeleton Dolls, Children of the Tower, is about female twins, identical twins, who speak in their own language. I don't know if you ever heard of twin speak, but if you Google it, it's a real thing.
It is, and it's weird, but it's
cool. I met a pair of, well, of course, they'd be a pair of twins, and I met their mother, and she started telling me all these really interesting stories about when they were little and all the crazy stuff they did. And singing was a part of it. And so I put frequency with a different celestial language with singing and frequency, and in the book, which is of course a novel, these women use that into their adult life, and they're able to raise the dead and heal people and do all kinds of stuff. And it's not witchcraft. It's heavenly. It's the original language of God prior to the Tower of Babel being destroyed. Mm-hmm. Because if you read the Old Testament, it said at one point we all spoke the same language, and we also could speak directly to God with that language, and it had power. But then when, you know, they built the tower and they tried to, like, become gods themselves, and he got angry and, you know, destroyed the tower and spread all the different civilizations throughout the globe and all the different languages that came from that, that language got lost. It was confused, as it says in the Greek version. It says the language was confused So they just couldn't understand each other anymore. And that's when that language was lost. But in my book, it is still alive because there's a small coven of female practitioners that have kept that alive since the times of Merlin, because that's what Merlin was using when he was incantating, you know, healings on people and stuff. He was using that ancient language. But the Catholic Church didn't want anybody else having that kind of power, so they abolished that language again when they came into the Britannia, you know, and around, I don't know, 700, 800, whatever it was, AD. So my book, Skeleton Dolls, Children of the Tower, uses that, and it's actually a trilogy. And so the book I have now on Amazon is available on both Kindle and hard copy, and I have a sequel, which is the second of the trilogy, that I'm shopping right now. So in the meantime, people can read that first one, which is pretty cool. So that's available if people want it, both in Kindle and hard copy.
And now I got to download that tonight. Oh yeah,
That's all about vibration and singing and healing.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, we talked about the predestination again. You know, you talked about you've just always had that propensity for fretted instruments. It's funny, with the comedy. Nobody ever told me that I didn't know how to be a comedian. With this show, the podcast, nobody ever told me that I didn't know how to do a podcast when I was on radio. Nobody told me I didn't know how to be on the radio. My video channel, nobody ever told me I didn't know how to make videos, and I've always just been able to do it. You know, I don't know. It's strange. And like I say, I believe that that's a gift that I've got, is to be able to,
to calm people
and talk to them. And I've never met a stranger.
Wow.
And it drives my wife insane. We were in Walmart one night, just went in to pick up a couple of things, and it was me, her, and my girls. And we were over near the garden center, and I saw this old man looking at a Blackstone griddle, and he looked confused. So, of course, I went over and talked to him, and 45 minutes later, I think I actually sold him the 36-inch and the 17-inch.
Wow.
And my wife and kids were just standing there shaking their heads going, did you really just sell griddles for Walmart? I'm like, no, I helped that guy make good decisions.
Wow.
But yeah, it's just
wow.
That's my thing. I'm a people person, and I, you know, any way I can get out to people, I do, because it's just nobody's ever told me I couldn't.
So there you go.
Yeah,
the language that you speak to yourself is the language that leads you on your journey to your destiny. And if you've talked to yourself a certain way, your ear hears your mouth say it, and it goes in a circle. It's in like a feedback circle.
Yeah.
So that's where that comes from.
Yeah. But I tell you, man, I'm having a ball. And I know that stew, I can still smell it. It's killing me. It is killing
me.
Yeah,
well, I'll be getting into it in a little bit, but I just opened the lid off the top, and I just told folks in there, just dig in, because, you know, I'm on talking to Brad with Smoked Meats, having a great time. Thank you so much for having me tonight.
Oh, anytime, man. What is your, if you could have one meal, Robert Wall asked me this one time when I was interviewing him, you know, the guy from Bull Durham and Arliss and all those shows.
Yeah.
When I got him on, it was more like he was interviewing me, because he asked me a boatload of questions, which was awesome. But he asked me a question that stuck with me. He said, what is your death row meal? I'm like, that's a really good question. You know, if you could have just one more thing to eat, what would it be?
Well, you're talking about just one singular thing, or you talking about like a combination?
Yeah, combination.
Are we talking surf and turf, or are we just talking one meal? Yeah, one item?
what's your death row meal?
Well, it would probably, are you asking me?
Yeah.
Okay, well, it would probably be a combination of a few things. But it would be definitely king crab legs with drawn butter. Okay. And another one might be, lollipop lamb chops, you know, the loin lamb chops, cooked Greek style with mint, of course. Mm-hmm. And that's because I'm Welsh and I'm British, and we love our lamb and we love our mint chutney and all that shit. Mm-hmm. I would probably also think about a pasta dish. So it'd probably be something like a butternut squash ravioli with some kind of delicious, you know, I don't know, kind of a, not a pesto, but something even lighter than that. or like a lemon butter white sauce from like Genoa or Tuscany, you know, the northern Italian, you know style. Mm-hmm. So anyway, those would be some of the ones I'd be thinking of.
We sound like kindred spirits, man. When you come to Atlanta,
and you notice that red meat was not at the top, but the lamb was in there first. So it was pretty funny.
Oh yeah, when you come to Atlanta, all you gotta do is holler at me because you're gonna get fed. There's actually a place up in Buckhead called the Delray Diner.
Oh yeah, I love Buckhead.
Yeah, they've got a room there that is actually a satellite room for the Punchline. And I've played there once, and the night of the rehearsal, I went early. And I sat down, and it's an old Greek couple that owns it. And if I go somewhere that has lamb, I always get the lamb first because that's my benchmark.
You got to know how to cook it. It's a very, very – reason why people don't like lamb is because nobody knows how to cook it.
These people know how to cook it. Oh,
that's great.
Man, that was the most phenomenal lamb I have ever had in my life. When we went back for the show –
because you can mess up some lamb real easy. I know that.
You can make lamb taste like wet hair.
And don't necessarily want mutton. You want to have some spring lamb. You want to have the young lamb. You know, you don't want it to get too gamey, and you don't want to overcook it, you know, and you want to make sure that it's seasoned probably. Oregano and mint are two of the nicest things to go with lamb.
Yeah. Oh, man, these people, they know lamb. It was amazing.
That's fantastic.
We went back for the show,
and of course,
I ordered it again.
You know, garlic too.
Oh yeah,
that's great, man. Well, I'm glad there were kindred spirits on that. All right, do you have some British background in your family?
Let me see. As best I know, here's my background: Scotch, Irish, British, Scandinavian.
Oh, yeah. Well, then you're a lamb boy. There's nothing you can do about it.
Oh yeah.
If you're from northern Britannia, you're gonna have to have some lamb. There's no doubt.
Oh yeah.
There's people that I know that you just totally hate it. They can't even touch it. And I always ask them, "Are you got some English in you?" And a lot of times they don't have a whole lot. Mm-hmm. There'd be mostly German or French or
My wife. She don't like lamb, and she's got German in her.
Yeah, yeah. The Germans are not big on lamb.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I don't know why it would make that much difference, but it just does.
Yeah.
But no, that's funny.
I love it, man. I love it. Like I said, I love cooking. I can cook anything from plain ramen noodles to a 5-star meal. And with ramen, I can hand stretch my own noodles if I want to get fancy.
Yeah, well, how's your pant size? Is it doing okay these days?
Oh, dude, I was a big boy to begin with, and being quarantined for this virus other than going to work.
I got to do a rock and roll show on video in 10 days. I'm just like, you know, trying to make sure I don't go too nuts in the next 10 days just so I can make sure I'm not all inflated.
I understand. I'm actually trying to, you know, put in for a promotion at work, and I might have subconsciously done it just to get new uniforms.
So what else can I answer for you on the rock and roll celebrity bandwidth or, you know, any other musicology kind of stuff related to why you want to be on tonight?
Well, let me see. What?
Because we sure are talking about cooking a lot.
We are.
And I can go on and on and on about that.
And like I say, but this thing steers itself all over. I've gone from talking about somebody's Grammy with them to Bigfoot in the same episode.
So it
steers all over the place.
Okay. Well, I can go way out in outer space, too, if you want me to.
Oh, yeah. Well, I know your gear. I know you're mainly a Les Paul guy.
Not really, believe it or not, even though we were using one in the last couple of days, but my buddy was playing it. Mm-hmm. In fact, the client that I have here right now is Steve McCarty. He wrote Wild Mountain Honey for Steve Miller, which is that really nice kind of sitar raga that's on the Greatest Hits album of Steve Miller.
Mm-hmm.
And he wrote that, and he's here working on a bunch of new material. And I'm producing him, but he's playing all the guitars, and I'm telling him what to play. And I'm using my collection. I actually have a Les Paul,
mm-hmm.
and I'm having him play it. It sure sounds good, but I don't usually use one on stage that often.
Mm-hmm.
I'm mostly a Strat and Tele guy.
You see, once again, after my own heart, I am a Tele guy.
Yeah, well, they're great, man.
I love a Tele.
I did grow up with the Tele, but I got one about 10 years ago that I really liked, and I just started using it. And it's like, I don't use it for everything. Mm-hmm. Of course, it doesn't have a Wang bar because I do a lot of Hendrixian kind of styles, and I use a Wang bar. I use the tremolo. And so I still use a 1960 Custom Shop Relic that I have. It's just amazing Stratocaster. Mm-hmm. But I use a Tele quite a bit in the show. And then I just got a really nice 1958 reissue 335. And I'd rather play that than a Les Paul all day long.
Yeah. You know what's funny? My favorite Tele I've ever owned was made by a company called AXL.
Yeah, and I've heard of them.
Yeah, it was their Badwater. It was a knockoff of the Fender's Roadworn.
Yeah.
And it was
My Tele is not a real Tele either. Mine's a K-Line from St. Louis. Mm-hmm. And it is every bit as good as a Custom Shop Tele you could buy.
Yeah, this thing, I paid $100 for it in a pawn shop. And, you know, I loved it. It was a cheap guitar to begin with, but just the feel of it, the action was good. The tone was perfect. I mean, it just, it's one of those that, man, and I hit a rough patch and had to pawn it. And that
sucked. For $100, you can't complain.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, you know, I wished I'd have never gotten rid of it. When I worked in Washington County, it was about 50 miles from home, and if I had a really nasty shift, on the way home we had these two bridges, and they were called the Twin Bridges, and you could actually pull up under one of them and fish. And I would pull up under that bridge early in the morning and get out my guitar, and I carried one of the Line 6 pod beans, the little processor that goes on your strap. And I had a little pig nose amp, and I would sit under that bridge and play for about 2 hours just to kind of get rid of the day. And that was my go-to guitar. I kept it in the car with me a lot of times.
Now, you just mentioned fishing. I don't know if we've ever talked about the fact that I fish all the time.
Man, you got to get to Georgia, dude.
I've got a pond
full of catfish.
All right. Well, I mean, I'm fishing all the time. I have a cabin up in Montana. In fact, I'll be going there at the end of this month. I fish up there for all kinds of different species. But I also fish the ocean out here in Morro Bay, which is Central Coast, California. So I'm either out there or I'm up in the mountains or I'm out in the Sierras catching, you know, rainbows and browns and brook trout and stuff. So I'm fishing all the time.
Oh, man. I love fishing. I tell you a good sauce that goes on any kind of white fish is get some peaches and puree them and put an equal part of heavy cream in it and 1 teaspoon, just a little bit of red pepper flake, just enough to give it a little bit of bite, and reduce that by about half and use that as a sauce for your fish, and it is amazing.
Wow. That sounds good.
Yeah.
Yeah. It sounds like Justin Wilson.
Oh, yeah.
Remember him?
Oh, yeah. I remember Justin Wilson big time.
Yeah. What I'm going to did. That's what he said. What I'm going to did.
we're gonna use a little wine.
Yeah, he was putting wine in everything. I just put some wine in my stew a minute ago, and I was thinking of Justin when I did it.
Yep, it's funny. Whenever I was young, you know, if I had bourbon or anything, it was gone. Now I get a good bourbon and I cook with it most of the time.
Yeah, I put it in my coffee in the morning. I make Irish coffee with that stuff.
Have you had the Jesse James bourbon?
No.
Oh, man, it's the lead singer from Jackal, Jesse James Dupree.
Does it make you want to rob a train?
Oh, man, this stuff is amazing. And it's a cheap bourbon. I think I pay $16 a fifth for it.
Well, that's cheap.
Yeah,
that's
and it's good. Really good. It surprised me the first time I bought it. I thought, okay, I'm just going to put this on the shelf because it's cool.
Jesse James bourbon, dang.
Yeah, but I do a burger with it.
Now we're talking.
Yeah, I've got a 2x6-inch round cake pan, and you put saran wrap in it, put a little bit of brown sugar in the bottom, pack it full of hamburger, poke holes in it, and pour a shot of bourbon on it and let it soak in, put some more brown sugar on it, put it in your smoker for about 20 minutes, and then finish it off on a flat top or a cast iron. That brown sugar caramelizes.
See, we got to be careful now with our age and our weight right now. That stuff is like what we used to be able to eat when we were kids.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, have you tried the Beyond Burger, the Beyond Meat? I mean,
I have not tried them yet.
It's called Beyond Meat, and it's made out of peas, and beets, and they got a recipe with a certain type of little. They got a thing going on. I got to tell you, man, the sausage and the hamburger, I've been cooking with it. My family, who are not like, you know, big time vegetarians or anything, they are raving about it. I mean, I make a cheeseburger taste like in and out. I got meatballs I'm doing. I got sausages I'm doing. It's all beyond meat. It's all vegetarian. And I got to tell you, man, if you crisp it just right, you fry it just right, mm-hmm. you do it just right. I mean, even when you make the hamburger, because the beet juice that's in it, mm-hmm. you can get it real crispy on the outside, and it even looks like real burger, and it'll be rare on the inside with the beet coloring. And when you eat it, you go like, wait a minute, is this meat? Because the texture and everything, what they do with the peas and the mm-hmm. skins that are on the peas and all the stuff that they do with it, mm-hmm. it's amazing, man. I'm not talking about the Impossible Burger. Yeah. That's the cheap stuff that you buy like at Burger King and Carl's. Yeah. I'm talking about this stuff is pretty expensive. I mean, it's like, you know, anywhere from $7 to $8 a pound, mm-hmm. like for just ground the ground meat part. But mm-hmm. man, for your body at this age, I mean, I'm 66 next month. I mean, I'm on Medicare now. I got to watch it, you know. I can't just be, like, pounding all this, you know, meat all the time. And if I do, it's usually organic. Mm-hmm. But you ought to check it out, man. You could make meatballs. You can make spaghetti sauce. It's pretty amazing. And the sausages are amazing.
I'll give it a shot.
Yeah, they got a spicy one, and they got a normal brat, you know. Just get the spice. If you like spice, just get the hot Italian spicy Beyond Meat sausage. Make it in the morning for breakfast. What I do is I cut them down the middle. Mm-hmm. And I fry them on both sides so it gets crispy on both sides. Mm-hmm. And it gets nice and chewy, just like meat. And my kids eat it, and they just go like, "Dad, that tastes just like pork."
Hmm.
I go, "Yeah, there you go. It's going to be a lot healthier, too."
So I've got a sausage you would like. It's chicken and sun-dried tomato.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
Oh, yeah, it's good. It's one that I just started doing a while back. I love it.
That's a good one.
Yeah. But I'm ready to go. I'm ready for gun season to start next month because, you know, I love hunting deer, and I don't have any deer meat in the freezer right now. So
we shoot them with arrows up on my property in Montana. We got whitetails, so many, it's like rabbits all over the place.
See, I can't stand and swing a bow and hit you with it.
Fortunately, my partner up there, he's a dead shot. He takes those razor sharp points and he just explodes their heart so fast, they don't even know they've been hit. Yeah. They just kind of look at you. And they just kind of go like, "What was that?" And then they kind of walk away a little bit, and then they bleed out and they lay down. And then it's so humane. Mm-hmm. It's almost like halal, you know, butchering. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
I mean, he's so accurate. And we only take spike bucks and dry does.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, you know, I'm one of those people. I've never been a trophy hunter because, you know, it just, to me, I've never found a recipe for antlers.
Yeah.
And, you know, I love to use every part of the deer that I can because to me it's respecting that animal. It just died so your family can eat.
Yep, we have reservations up there. We give all the parts to the natives up there, and they make all kinds of cool, you know, instruments and clothing and just all kinds of trinkets and stuff. We never waste any of it either.
Yeah, and that's, you know, to me that's what gives hunters a good name. I can't stand it when somebody just, you know, wants to shoot for a rack and, you know, oh, well, that's cool, whatever, but come on, use the deer. That's what God gave us.
Yeah, we do it for the backstrap.
Oh, son.
That's all we're caring about.
I'm all over some backstrap. And it's funny, a lot of people don't like to use the ribs because there's not a lot of meat between them.
Yeah.
Man, I'll take the time and I'll use a fillet knife a lot of times, just cut that meat out from between them.
Uh-huh.
And scramble some eggs and just put those little strips in there while the eggs are cooking. Oh.
Yeah, as long as you get the tallow, you know, the yellow fat tallow off.
Yeah.
This tastes great. Tastes like beef.
Exactly. And it's better for you.
Yeah, it is. It's real low fat.
But, oh, yeah.
Okay, we're talking about food again. Let's get back to music.
We are. But, oh, man. Like I say,
so anyway, you said you really liked the song Rockin' Me, which was recorded in 1977. And that was recorded somewhere between Novato and also a little bit up in Case Smith, up in Seattle, mm-hmm. and also a little bit at Steve's house in Grants Pass, Oregon. And that was Lonnie Turner, his original bass player on bass,
mm-hmm.
Gary Malibur on drums, and then Steve on guitars, of course. And then I don't think there's any keyboards on it, but if there were, It might have been Byron Allred, but it could have been Joaquin Young. But that was recorded before I met him, because I met him in 1981 when we did the Abracadabra album. And I wrote three songs on that album and helped him kind of co-produce that record.
I remember when Abracadabra came out, man, I think I was in middle school. And I mean, yeah. it was every other song.
It was one of those songs that you either liked it or you hated it.
Yep, exactly. Exactly. And, you know,
fortunately, a lot of people liked it. We made some money, so that was good.
Yeah. You know, Rockin' Me, for me, that song, just the zone that they sound like they're in when everybody's playing it, just that nice, smooth, just drive. And I love the way it sounds.
Wow. Well, is there anything else I can answer for you in terms of musicology or bands or celebrities or songs or anything?
I think that's got me, man.
All right.
You're welcome on here anytime.
I have a jazz guitar record also on CD Baby, and that's called New Vintage. It's on CD Baby. I actually need to re-release it with all of the different new mixes I have. I have some new mixes on it, but it's been up there for a couple of years, and people really enjoy it. And it's a smooth jazz instrumental record, and it's kind of like, you know, George Benson kind of stuff, but it also has some rock and roll kind of feel to it, too, because I love Terry Kath of Chicago. He was one of my favorite guitar players. And so I kind of fuse, you know, Wes Montgomery, you know, jazz guitar, big box playing with more of like an approach to like where Terry Kath is coming from. That was my style that I developed, but that's called New Vintage on CD Baby.
Yeah.
But, you know, other than that, I'm working on some new stuff that I'll probably have out soon. But my newest thing that I'm working on is my YouTube channel, which I have not really put a lot of content upon, but that's, I'm going to pursue that as my new venture to kind of reinvent myself so people can enjoy, you know, my master classes on guitar and bass, you know, recording, songwriting, you know, master classes. And then a cooking show will be a separate channel from that, but it'll be connected.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the things that I'll be talking about. Maybe even guitar repair, you know, pickup installation, you know, luthier kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. I do that as well. And then fishing. So it'll all be on the one channel. So people just watch out for Kenny Lee Lewis on YouTube on his channel. That's what I call it. It's just you, Kenny Lee Lewis, if you want to subscribe.
Very cool. I will definitely do that because I'm always, like I say, I'm always looking for new stuff.
Yep. And if you want to go to my website, it's just KennyLeeLewis.com.
You beat me to the punch.
Ah!
Oh, yeah. Oh, man, it's been great having you on here. I have dug it so much.
Yeah. Well, you and I are going to get like, have you ever eaten a farm burger in Atlanta?
I have not.
Farm Burger is a little place. It's right by the theater that's down by all the malls downtown there. I can't remember the street it's on, but there's a upstairs, theater, one of those real fancy ones that's right up above it. It's an American, I think, AE or whatever, but it's one of those ones that have all the real fancy seats, and you can order wings or the Caesar salad and have a cocktail while you're watching a movie. Well, right below that is a place called Farm Burger, and it's an organic, grass-fed, beautiful hamburger joint that you go up to the counter, but they got like collard greens and chicken livers. They got all kinds of stuff. You don't have to just have a burger, but you customize your own burger, and they got real ice cream milkshakes there. Of course, I can't have them because I have a lactose intolerant, but my guitar player on my band, Jacob, he always makes sure he has a shake from there. But man, I make myself a gluten-free, you know, like goat cheese, manchego, grass-fed cheeseburger there that's got everything on it you can think of, and then I get myself some collard greens and some chicken livers. I'm happy as a camper.
Oh man, you're
that's
killing me.
That's called Farm Burger, and it's real high class, but it's just real low key. I mean, it's like a little patio out front where you can eat inside, but it's just, you just go up the counter, you custom order, and they just bring it to you. But I highly recommend that in Atlanta.
Very cool. Yeah, you come to Atlanta, man. We're gonna have to get together. We got some stuff to do.
I've been to that blues club, too, that's kind of in that same neighborhood. Uh-huh. It's a barbecue. You ever been to that blues club barbecue? They have blues bands. It's really good. I can't remember the name of it, but it's right close to where we stay. We usually stay at the old Ritz there, which was right in the middle of all those malls.
Oh, yeah.
And we kind of walk over, you know, where Elton lives in that high rise there. It's that same neighborhood.
Okay.
Yeah. I love that area.
Very cool.